Hi, this is Mark Wade, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 354 of Longbox Heroes. I'm Todd, joined with Joe. How are we doing today, Joe?
Todd, I'm doing fantastic. I'm ready to talk about podcasting. I'm ready to talk about comic books of all varieties.
Of every variety? There's nothing you wouldn't talk about, huh?
Well, if you want to goad me into something, I'm sure I can make my feelings known on a much more adult platform, but you wouldn't do that sort of thing. You're not the sort of person who would just gently rib someone to get an adverse reaction out of them.
Not me, sir. Right. My halo is shiny.
Mm-hmm.
No horns holding that one up.
Right. Did you know there's more devil-based emojis than there are halo-based emojis?
The video game for Xbox?
No. Yeah. Like when you pull up your phone and you, like, whatever your little default thing for emojis are, there's more that are devils than there are that are angels.
I hope that's the plot of the new emoji movie.
Well, Todd, in 2 weeks I can tell you after I go, or 3 weeks I can tell you after I go see it.
Oh, I can't wait to get your emoji review.
Right.
Are you going to review it in emojis?
Is there a middle finger emoji? I'm sure there is.
There probably is.
But
I look forward to that. But you know what I look forward to even more?
What's that, Todd?
Some of the news we have today, like two companies crossing over with a go-to creator that I know Joe wouldn't miss, or me either. And also, what's in a number, Joe? Marvel doesn't know either.
Oh, boy.
Also, con news, free digital books and sales. What we read last week, Unholy Grail number one and Rock Candy Mountain number four. I always almost screw that up every time I say that.
What do you almost always say?
Rock Mountain Candy.
Rock Mountain Candy?
I don't know why, but that's where my brilliant brain goes to whenever I see those words or want to talk about that book. I want to say Rock Mountain Candy.
Right, and a rare week, no Marvel books, no DC books. How about that?
Oh, this is the IE show.
Right, we're trying to suck up to the hipster crowd with this episode.
Oh boy, let me get my lederhosen and cowboy hat on so I look like one of them. But what we're looking forward to this week, also Todd and Joe have issues, which is Daredevil number 7, which I'm not sure which volume that is because they keep renumbering Marvel books.
Well, I'm sure that'll never happen ever again come this September, but we'll talk about that shortly.
And also at the end of the show, we have a spoiler-filled talk of the new Spider-Man Homecoming movie.
Oh boy, do we ever.
I can't wait to get into this with you.
Neither can I. I've done my best to keep all of my discussions of this private. I saved my entire life for this show.
I kept mine close to my vest, too. I did not even tweet that I went to see it.
Right.
Because I wanted everybody to be surprised.
So let's get into it. Let's get into the news. Now, it's a little bit light on news, only because I think everyone's holding off on some of their big, big announcements for San Diego, which is next weekend.
So we'll probably get announcements of what they're going to announce at San Diego the beginning of next week.
Right. And some publishers, I think, like we've already seen like everyone's exclusives come out. And there's nothing really that's jumped out at me of any of the exclusives that I really, really need. Oh, no. You know what, actually? I have to mention this. And, oh, let me look to see what the company is that has this.
While you're looking that up, I'm thinking about the only exclusive that I saw that I kind of wanted, which there may be more eventually, was they had a Funko, a Clara Doctor Who Funko. But then I found out it was a shared exclusive. Do you know what a shared exclusive is, Joe?
It's probably between whatever company it is at San Diego, along with a mass market store where you could purchase these sort of things.
Right. So I think it's previews on this one.
Okay.
So it'd be in previews.
So there's a company called Super 7 Store, where they do kind of, remember the old Muscle action figures?
Yes. Were they the ones that you dipped in water and they bulged up?
No, you're thinking of just like, I don't know. They were like the little pink things. They were like wrestlers. They kicked garbage can for us dumb Americans.
That's where they belong. But yeah, I kind of remember them.
So in that style, they've done a whole bunch of new ones. This company, Super 7, they've done He-Man, they've done Mega Man, they've done, like, Iron Maiden Eddie ones, they've done, you know, the Geiger Alien ones, they've done all sorts of ones, right?
Mm-hmm.
So at San Diego, they have an exclusive shirt with the old school Muscle logo on it. And then I think Hasbro is the one who currently does the World Wrestling Entertainment action figures. Right. Their San Diego exclusive is the man from Decatur, Illinois, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Isaac Yankum, DDS.
Oh, my goodness. Isn't he running for some sort of office?
Right, he is. He's running for mayor.
Oh.
Of some sleepy little town in Tennessee.
Ah.
And I've got the in on a friend of mine who lives in the town. And has been to many, and he's a wrestling fan too. And it takes everything in his power not to go up to Glenn Jacobs, mayoral candidate, and ask him questions about the Big Red Machine Kane, Fake Diesel, the Christmas Creature, Isaac Yankum, Unabom, all the great characters he's portrayed over his storied 20-plus year career.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, those are the exclusives that I wanted as I'm talking about those. But some of the advance announcements that we got were two Archie DC collaborations. One is definite with a date. The other one actually we'll get into momentarily. So the one that has a date coming out this October is Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy Meet Betty and Veronica. Written by Paul Dini and Mark Andraco, which is a great team. With art by Laura Brown, who does a lot of stuff for Archie. You know, it's got Adam Hughes covers, got Amanda Connor covers. You know, it's got the whole deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this one's definitely happened. We've had a lot of other, you know, Archie meets so-and-sos and crossovers and all sorts of things. This one I'm very much looking forward to because the creative team on it. It's, you know, with these Archie meets whoever's like, I didn't get the Archie meets Glee one. Or I didn't get the Archie meets Kiss one, or whatever it is. But this is like the perfect storm of like great creators and great people meeting up with the Archie characters.
Right. I'm probably going to pick it up too. I find that interesting. I like when Paul Dini does anything. I don't know if you know this. He did some really good episodes of Batman the cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
The animated series. Let's upscale it. You know,
right.
It's not
let's
just
not
a cartoon.
Play with the. The cartoon actually did. Was, right?
That's right. That cartoon was art. I'm looking forward to it. I want to see how it goes because Archie's been really firing on all cylinders lately. The company, everything they do, the TV, the Riverdale TV show. So I'm like, you know what, Archie? Kudos to you. And, you know, Batman's always been good. They don't need the Archie push. You know what I mean? But I think it'll be pretty cool.
Right. Now, the other one I tentatively mentioned because it was mentioned as a possible announcement that they would be doing an Archie Batman 66 crossover with speculative writing chores handled by Mark Waid. So the reason I say speculative and I tiptoe and everything else, this was teased as a story that was supposed to be announced last year at San Diego. When it came up in my news feed, I'm like, is this an old story? Did someone link to, like, the story from last year of the book that never happened? And I went back through my own personal notes, and I saw there it was. A year ago, we talked about this book, and here we are a year later still talking about it. Not out. And, you know, Mark Waid's got a... He currently still writes Archie. He's co-writing Jughead, and he writes the main Archie book. And he also has a storied and colorful past with DC. So I can imagine that might be some of the reason why this book, you know, is still in the planning stages, if you will.
Mm-hmm. One of the new villains is Dio.
Oh, boy.
And I was having trouble being pushed through, probably.
But yeah, either one of these books would be high on my list of things, and I'm sure probably in the next week or so we'll have a lot more announcements on not only this, but a lot more things from all of your favorite publishers.
If not, we'll hear more about Batman 66 in San Diego.
It'll become the Duke Nukem of comic books.
The wet works there for a while.
Oh, boy. So, of course, the big story, the next big thing, we've talked about, it's kind of dominated the news here for the last couple of weeks, and that's Marvel Legacy. You know, hot off the presses with Marvel Legacy, the books are also going to have lenticular covers as well, all those new relaunch books.
That's right. Scooping, ladling some of that DC warmth.
Now listen, it's just a coincidence that there's 52 announced books with one secret book that hasn't been announced yet. All of this is in going back to the original numbers, back to basics, all that sort of thing.
I'm surprised they didn't actually skip the whole new 52, because that was kind of a failure for DC, and just go right into a new reborn, like Rebirth.
Well, again, I'm sure there's, and I'm not following every single interview, and I'm not sure if this has been posed to, you know, Tom Brevoort, Axel Alonso, whoever's doing the rounds on these, and one of them come back and say the ill-fated words, it'll be like New 52, but better.
Ugh.
Or done right, my apologies. You remember that one with DiDio?
Yes, that was when, Countdown, it was 52 done right.
Yep.
And do you remember when Sleepwalker was Sandman done right?
Oh, boy. Was that Kirkman who said that?
No, that was way before Kirkman. That was one of the editors at Marvel back in the day. Ugh, that's Sleepwalker book. Oh, kid, what's your powers? Every time I fall asleep, an alien comes out of my head and becomes a superhero. They should have just called it Concussion Protocol. Because he was always getting knocked out.
Well, we didn't know about the severity of concussions back then. You know, you just rub some dirt on it and you'd be okay. Get back in there, kid.
That's right. Who's the president, you know? Four. He's good.
So, last week when they said that all the books were going back to their original numbering, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they showed, here's the list of all the books and here's what those numbers are going to be in September. And Todd, a different Joe. A younger Joe, a less sane Joe. And I actually had this conversation with this weekend about this. Well, no, I can't say it was this weekend. I had a conversation with someone last week saying a different Joe would have meticulously gone over all of those numbers and shown how wrong they all were.
Right.
That's a different Joe. That Joe's back there.
Mm-hmm.
Then Marvel put out their listings of saying, here's how we got to these numbers, and they're all wrong.
Wow.
They're all wrong. Like, they're in, like, just as an example, like, so far we've got the Hulk, we've got the Iron Man, we've got Deadpool, we've got Avengers, and we've got Luke Cage. So, like, they include issues of Tales to Astonish, which don't have the Hulk in them, and then they don't include the current run of Invincible Iron Man, because Tony Stark's not in it. And then sometimes they include annuals, and sometimes they don't. Sometimes they include miniseries as is, and sometimes they don't. It's just all over the place.
My favorite part of this was, I was like, oh, Marvel doesn't know what the numbering is. Let me shoot a quick email to Joe so he knows that this is going on. And I don't often send Joe, you know, news or emails for stuff. But I send it, and I get an email back. I think it was in all caps. Oh, I'm all over this. I'm like, okay, all right. Jeez, you'd think I was sending emails about ice cream or something.
Oh, boy. We don't call them creamies here, so don't get that in here.
No, please. We're not insane people.
But it just makes me wonder if they're going through all of this. Like, I get going back to the original numberings, whatever that original numbering means, you, to me, to the people at Marvel, to the new fans that they're going to come back in. Like, is, just as an example, is someone going to buy Luke Cage 166 that wasn't going to buy Luke Cage number one?
That train is so far has so far long ago left the station.
Right.
With renumbering, like, that was one of the things that, you know, we've discussed at the shop at great length, is killed the old-timey, and they're like, oh, well, you know, you've renumbered so many times, I have my collection, I was getting it just to keep the numbering going, I don't have to do it anymore. You've done that seven times, we're seven times away from those customers, so you're not bringing those guys back. Now all you're doing is confusing the new people who are like, oh, this was, I had issue seven. How come I have issue 166?
Right.
So I don't know. To me, it's just I kind of like what DC did. They did when they did Rebirth. They were like, oh, we're only doing two because we're closing in on 1,000. And for them, it was real simple because it only had been 4 years or 5 years. And they're like, okay, we only have this many issues of the book. It's not real confusing to get back to, you know, the proper numbering. But with Marvel, they've changed so much. Like you said, it's like, then do you knock one away for a minus one issue? Like, do zeros count? I'm like, I don't even know anymore.
So the other question I have, of course, with all this is, when are they going to do a renumbering after this?
Let's see. When does this start? Sometime in September, let's
say?
Starts
in September. How long is Marvel going to stick to this?
July of next year. July, yeah. August, September, somewhere in there. Now, it won't be a company-wide thing, but I do believe they'll...
Right, I'm not saying a company-wide thing. I'm not talking about the release of a new book that previously had other incarnations. I'm assuming, you know, this is just gonna kind of be rolled out, like, okay, these are the books that are all being renumbered, and then if something new gets released in like December or January, and let's say it's another book that's had previous iterations,
mm-hmm.
it's not part of this particular relaunch.
I have the answer now. I thought about it for a second. I have the answer. What's the first issue, like, numbering? Because, like, you look into this stuff, me, I'm like, I don't even care, so I don't know. But what's the book with the closest numbering to an anniversary issue? So, like, if you have a 142, then 150 is an anniversary issue,
okay.
Or 200, then we'll hit that issue, and then that's the first book to go back to number one.
Okay, so one thing I'll say, everything's an anniversary issue.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, just looking at the list, the first issue of Avengers back is 672. You want to say 675 is an anniversary?
Nah, I don't believe. I believe in,
okay,
50s and 100s.
50s, okay.
And then 50s have to be on the quarter.
Okay.
I don't know. Sometimes I'm not big on, like, but you can get away with like a 450.
Right.
But I believe in, like, I don't know. But anyway, go ahead. Say what you're going to say.
So Iron Man's first issue back is 593.
That's the book.
Okay.
Seven issues and then like three for good measure and then we're back.
Okay. So you're going to say that's going to go... So they're going to do issue 700?
Oh, yeah. They want a 700.
Okay.
And then within 6 months, that'll be back at number one.
So you're saying over a year.
Around, yes, close to,
because you got seven issues to make it to 700, and then you got, you know, a year.
That's when they go back to
November. At least one of these books are going to go back to their original numbering.
Now, don't forget,
they're going to change the numbering again, is what I mean.
Right, but then it might not be a whole year because of the fact that how often do these chip sometimes?
Right, okay.
So that throws off everything. If they can get a good artist and double ship a book here and there,
it's going to be
faster.
We don't have the shipping schedule. That's a good point.
Exactly. And some Marvel books ship more than once a month.
Okay.
You see, like, where I'm getting into the, like, I can't give you a date. Okay. I can only give you so many issues after the – that's why I'm giving you the after the anniversary issue.
Right. And obviously – so I'm going to – okay. So if it's seven – You're going to say minimally 6 months.
Six issues after 700.
Okay. Okay. But at least that's a thing. You know what I mean? Like, that's a marked thing.
Right.
That you could say, whenever what would technically be issue 706 comes out, that's what it is.
Right.
I say it's going to be May of next year.
Okay.
In time for Infinity War movie. Or whatever the Marvel movie that comes out in May is. One of these books are going back to a number one.
Oh, I believe it, yeah.
Yeah.
But if, like I said, if they kick up the, especially Iron Man, because Iron Man's the big Tony Stark, Robert Downey Jr. thing. He'll be back. It'll all be good. I don't know. Marvel's wacky.
They're trying something, man.
And at least, you know what I love? I don't have these elaborate notebooks and blah, blah, blah. So this really doesn't screw with my brain too much. I just buy my books weekly. I go in on Tuesday, pick them out, throw them in a bag, and I pick them up on Wednesday.
Now, okay.
A lot of less stress for Todd.
Well, and it's not so much as stress for me, but it's just more of frustration.
Put it on the poll. Does it frustrate Joe?
Yeah. So again, just kind of re-perusing the list, Thor is coming right out the gates at 700.
Ooh. Well, you can't do that. You can't go 700 and go to 1.
Right.
So you gotta have some Mjolnir cushion.
Okay. Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man, is coming out at 297.
Ooh.
Okay.
Oof. Good thing that happened after Homecoming.
Uh-huh.
Because that would have been a quick turnaround right there.
Yep. Well, and again, we just had a new number one last month, and in September it's going to 297. So it would go to issue 300 and then back to a new number one.
Yo-yo numbering.
Guardians of the Galaxy is 146.
Oof. Do you see why they... Now, wait a minute. Now the glove fits.
Right.
So this is all so they can get those... They looked at it and they're like, fudge the math on 20 books and get as close to anniversaries on all of them. And that's why none of this stuff works out. They just want to sell a 250, a 150, a 700.
Yep.
And that's what this is. This is a marketing ploy, and then they can go back to number ones.
Daredevil's 595.
Oh, my God. Do you see it now? Do you see it?
And I don't even need to look that up. That one is 1,000% wrong.
You don't know.
Oh, God.
Who's the Daredevil? Who's seen all of the Daredevil Netflix episodes?
All right. Touche.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing Spider-Man is 789.
That sounds about right.
Ugh.
Wait a minute. We hit 700.
I'm not saying that doesn't sound right. I'm saying that it's like you're 11 issues away from 800.
That sounds exactly right.
Ugh. Are they?
They'll probably use an unused Ditko cover, too, and it'll be $1 billion.
Moon Knight is 188.
Well, I think I've stumbled onto something
here,
Joe.
Yeah, I think you might have, Todd.
Oh, the truth is on this show.
Right. Oh,
man. Never doubt me, Joe. Never
and the one me. Last thing that I do want to mention with all of this, yet again, Todd, they're ripping us off.
How are they ripping us off?
Remember a couple months ago when we went back to this new numbering so that we can get a 300th episode?
Yeah. Oh, they're ladling our worms.
Absolutely, 100% they are.
And plus, Joe, all those 200s and 700s, they all get to be 599 books.
Oh, boy.
Wait, Todd,
what are you talking about? Issue, there was a random... What was just, like, in the current numbering of Amazing Spider-Man. Like, nowhere in the world of anything would this have fit in as an actual, you know, whatever. It was in issue 25. It was a $10 book.
Wow.
A $10 book!
Did it have a chromium cover?
No, it had a gatefold cover. And I think it was, like, 64 pages or something ridiculous like that.
Ugh.
But that said... Oh, man.
We've cracked the case, Joe.
Well, I'm sure a lot of other people cracked the case as well, but no one spent as much time on it as we have.
That's right, though. But we're thorough.
Right. So moving off of news, getting into conventions this weekend. As mentioned, you know, next weekend is San Diego, and I'm sure there'll be a lot to go over there. There's a couple little conventions this weekend. There's one called the Chicagoland Comic Con. And I'm not familiar with my Illinois geography, and I'm not sure where McCook, Illinois fits into Chicagoland, but...
Are you okay?
Close enough. I'm dying, excuse me.
Right. Hit me!
Great Lakes Comic Expo in Clinton Township, Michigan.
I wonder if the Great Lakes Avengers will be there.
I hope so. And the biggie this weekend would be the Raleigh Supercon in Raleigh, North Carolina. And Todd, you've got some of the biggest names in the history of performing.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Michael Rooker's going to be there. You've got Lee Majors is going to be there.
I'm going to get my DVD of Raven signed. Do you remember that TV show?
The professional wrestler used to be Scotty Flamingo? He had a TV
no.
show?
Oh. No, this was a different show about a martial artist who had an assistant who was older Lee Majors, who carried a lot of guns, had the two best quotes on TV ever. One of them was, "Love sickness is like seasickness. Everyone thinks it's hysterical, but you think you're going to die." And the other quote was, "Someday we're going to look back on this," and slam right into a parked car.
I know, anyway. This abomination.
I love that show. Lasted only one season.
Let me look
it up. And his name was Ski, and he talked like this. "Love sickness is like seasickness." He had that, like, gravelly. He did the extra gravel voice.
He really put it on.
Oh, he sold it. Don't you ever make fun of Raven.
And this was from the 90s. How do I have no memory of this?
I watched it every week until it was canceled.
Deep it's an hour-long action drama that featured martial arts, adventure, humor, mystery, and secret societies. How could you be any one thing when you're everything?
That's right.
Oh, my goodness.
I think we should do a whole podcast on Raven.
We could do a podcast on Raven. Especially for the promotional whatevers. They have the show has the font of Cocktail, the Tom Cruise movie.
That's right. It's that neon kind of...
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And
but anyway, who else?
Released recently. Okay, so also Jimmy J.J. Walker is going to be there.
Dynamite!
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have him sign my copy of The Giver.
Oh, goodness.
Also starring Mark Hamill.
Corvette Summer. That's the only thing I would get signed by Mark Hamill.
Randy Jones is going to be there.
It's Randy Jones, Joe.
Todd, he's the cowboy from The Village People.
Oh, my goodness.
And, of course, what good comic book convention is worth its salt if it doesn't have professional wrestlers there? Greg the Hammer Valentine is going to be there. Mm. Podcaster Hacksaw Jim Duggan is going to be there.
Selling bits of 2x4.
I'm sure he'll have the 2x4 there. From what I understand,
you.
Hacksaw's an affable fella.
He sells bits of 2x4 signed. It's a great gimmick.
He sells toothpicks.
Oh my goodness. These were actual 2x4s. I broke over wrestlers' heads.
And
look like...
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to step on your line there.
No, you go ahead. You go ahead.
And Ric Flair is going to be there.
Oh my goodness. I hope he's okay and not purple.
Well, listen, Todd. Nothing untoward has happened to any member of the world of professional wrestling in the last 7 days, and I'm sure Ric Flair will keep that honest tradition going this weekend in his old stomping grounds of Raleigh, North Carolina.
Oh, is he popular there?
That's his gimmicked hometown.
Wow. I bet he doesn't have to buy a beverage there for himself.
Oh, boy. Going to be a lot of thirsty plants in that hotel, is all I'm saying. Because Rick ain't sharing. Woo. But the one thing that we are sharing here, Todd, is the soon-to-be-named network at soon-to-be-named-network.com or soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com, where you can find out about a plethora of other shows, not only this dumb show that you're listening to, but the other dumb show that we do, Longbox Heroes After Dark, Prime Defective, and Prodigal Sons Podcast. Now, Todd, I was with the people who were involved in these shows. this past weekend in a secret clandestine meeting.
Oh, I wasn't invited. I didn't get the secret handshake.
And let's just say, I'll be watching an episode of a certain TV show that will not be named on this podcast before a new episode of either one of those shows happen.
Wow.
Fresher in Parlance, Profane Arguments, Puzzle Warriors 3, Podvocacy, and Aims and Downsights podcast, of course, Paladins, Voltron, Talking Gimmicks, going through some growing pains, going through some technical issues, but I'm sure that they'll be back. I have the assurance of Joey Schutz and Jason Kirk that those two shows will return, and I have the assurance of the members of those other two podcasts I mentioned that they'll never be seen again.
Mm-hmm.
But anytime any of those shows do happen to surprise you and come back, you can find out about them all at soontobenamednetwork.com, soontobenamednetwork.tumblr.com. So moving along here onto digital sales and freebies, no new freebies. All of those are the same, and I did double-check those before we started recording just to see if Marvel decided to pull a fast one on me. But there is a bunch of sales going on. The last week mentioned, or no, new one is Road to Comic-Con Indie Sale. And the one that jumped out to is Atomic Robo stuff. Now, the Atomic Robo stuff by Brian Clevenger, you can get in this sale, or you could also get in the IDW line-wide sale, where IDW just has anything that they publish on sale, I think at least until the end of the month, but that's one of the ones to put the code in for it. That's the only difference between this one and the other one.
Mm-hmm.
Boom is having a sale on all of their Planet of the Apes and Planet of the Ape-related books.
Wonder why.
Mm-hmm. I wonder why. We saw the trailer for that movie this past weekend in front of Spider-Man Homecoming. And right. My son was strangely intrigued by it, but I think that one might be a little bit too intense for a five-year-old.
They are. They are intense. I'm probably going to see that sometime this week, too. So
right.
I'm a big Ape Planet of the Apes mark. So
now, I liked the new one that they did. The first of them, because this is the third one of this current reboot, right?
Right.
I liked the first one a lot. I never had a chance to watch the second one, but from all accounts of what I understand, it's really good.
The second one
mm-hmm.
is legitimately better than the first one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like I love the first reboot of Planet of the Apes, but it takes a while to get to the apes, but the story's solid and amazing, and then there's the battle. Then you get to the second one, and everything's in place, and it's years later, and blah blah blah. But to me, they're both really good. The second one's a little bit better, and I'm hearing rumors that the third one is even better than the first two. Like this new run of Planet of the Apes is getting it all wrong. The movies are supposed to get worse as they go, but somehow they're getting better.
Gotcha. So Marvel is having different sales going on. One is Spider-Man Villains and Allies sale, which is a bunch of random collections of Spider-Man vs. the Vulture, Silk, Spider-Girl, Spider-Gwen, Spider-Man 2099, or Woman, all bunch of different Vulture appearances. I'm not really sure why either. And also they're having a sale on what they're calling best-selling collections. And there is way too much for me to even scrape the tip of the iceberg on this.
Mm-hmm.
However, I will mention that included in this is trades of all the Star Wars stuff, both the current Star Wars stuff and the stuff that they acquired from Dark Horse. And when I say the Star Wars stuff, I mean all of it is included in this. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of recent first issues from Marvel, like stuff that's come out within the last, I'd say, like 2 months, are included in the sale. And if you missed it the first time around and you're not getting those director's cut reprints at 2 issues a clip, the entire run of the Tom King Vision book can be picked up for $12.
That's a good price.
That's a good price. But there was a ton of stuff in that. And then the DC thing, the DC sale this week, is DC's finest Andy Kubert sale. And unfortunately to say, it's a bit of a hodgepodge. Just because it kind of goes to show that Andy Kubert hasn't done a ton of stuff at DC, or he hasn't done a ton of stuff for a very long time.
No, you could say he hasn't done a lot of stuff at DC. Okay. That was one of those flim-flams, as far as I'm concerned, when they got the Kubert boys over to DC.
Oh, a flim-flam?
Yeah, that was like, oh, they didn't do much. Or Adam didn't do much. I forget which one it was, but like it was like, oh, we did that one issue here, one issue there, and it was like, nope. But anyway, go ahead.
Right, so it's a bit of a hodgepodge, and there's stuff that he did covers for that are included in this, and then there's like raids that he did covers for, or
flim flam
a portion of the art for. But you know, check it out. You might find something you like on that one. That one's a little that one's dubious.
They're busy with the school. That's
listen. There's nothing I know more, Todd, about than allowing your outward product to kind of slip a little bit when you're more focused upon the school.
Ah, okay.
Anyway, let's get into what we read this week, Todd. I'm going to let you start since I've been talking for a while.
Yes, we will start with, let me get the book so I could read it properly, Rock Candy Mountain number 4 by Kyle Starks. This, after the last issue, Jackson, our main characters, Jackson and his partner Slim, who were attacked by the devil, are on the run. And Jackson needs help for his plan, so he has to go find someone called Biggs. But he doesn't tell his buddy Slim that the whole way they're going to get to meet Biggs is by getting arrested and going to prison to meet him. And while they're in there, they find out that the king of the hobos, Marion Flimbo, is in the clink because of something Jackson did to him a few issues ago.
He stole his ring.
Yes, and because of that, he had no proof that he was part of this rich family, and he goes into the prison and puts a bounty on Jackson. And Jackson has to devise a plan to come up with that he has made a deal with the devil that he can never be beaten when he fights one man, but now the whole prison is after him, so he has to come up with a usable plan to fight one man at a time to get out of the prison. And once again, some very colorful phrases in this that I absolutely, that's why I love this book, for some of the writing of just how over the top it is. But it's interesting to see where this is going, and I want to know if they ever get to Rock Candy Mountain, Joe, and only time will tell.
Yes. I really like this book. I like all the plight that hobo life is taking on poor Slim. I relish in his misery. I really do.
What?
Because I could, he's our entry point character, because I don't think I could stand the lifestyle either myself.
I could probably deal with the hobo lifestyle, but Hobo Todd has potential.
Hobo Todd does have a ton of potential. Even though just a few months ago, I very could have been Hobo Joe. And Hobo Joe rolls off the tongue a little bit better than Hobo Todd. But I ain't cut out for no hobo and lifestyle. I pay a mortgage for a reason.
Hey, listen, I don't pay a mortgage, but I would tote that bindle. I would.
Oh, he never stops hunting, except to check on his bindle. But anyway, even when it was set up of how Jackson was going to punch his way out of this predicament, even though it was very, very telegraphed, it was no less enjoyable to see Jackson take on the entire prison and win.
My favorite part is because of what happens to Slim by one of the guards. Jackson makes a promise, and the stuff that he's like, that I love about this book and the writing, is when he says the things to the guard and then follows through on it later on. I'm like, fantastic. And Jackson genuinely does care about Slim, but he puts Slim through some rigors. And that's the thing, and I want to see now where their relationship goes. And I do like the character of the one-handed big sis who can't talk.
Right.
Is interesting, so. And I want to see where their plan goes. And, you know, if Rock Candy Mountain is real. I think it is, Joe. I personally want to believe in Rock Candy Mountain.
Well, we shall see. I don't know if this is an ongoing. I think this is solicited at the very least. How far out are we solicited on this? I don't think there was an issue solicited for September, but I'm pretty sure there is up to at least August. I don't know if it's like one of those deals, like some other Image books where they like take a month off or whatever. But
they don't
want
to.
I'm sorry.
They don't want to fight. He doesn't want to fight those Marvel renumberings.
Right.
That's what it is. Jackson can only fight one book at a time, Joe.
Not 51 books and one secret book.
That's 52 books.
You get the 51 books, but not the secret book.
That's right.
But no, this is a really good book, really enjoyable. And again, I would be reading more of Kyle's stuff, but he's doing a lot of, I don't want to say genre stuff. He's doing like, I don't know, Rick and Morty. You know what I mean?
Right, me either.
Right, and he's doing an adaptation of like a video game as well. And I don't know the video game, so I'm like, man, I'm going to be lost if I read this book. But a creator-owned property like this that he is doing, he feels very strongly about, then by all means, this is definitely a book you should all be checking out.
Mm-hmm.
So my book that I read is Unholy Grail Nun from Aftershock Comics with art by Mirko Kolak, written by Cullen Bunn. Did you read this?
No, I did not.
Okay. I recommend this if you are a fan of the Knights of the Round Table sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This book, of course, and obviously it's a little tipped off with the title being Unholy Grail, but really where it's going, it more or less paints the story that King Arthur, and more specifically Merlin, are the bad guys of the story. That Merlin is, you know, considered by the kingdom either a demon or possessed by the devil, and that he's been the one who put all of these pieces into play to get Arthur to be the king, succeeding that above and beyond the rest of his brothers, and then he being the one who brings Merlin the Grail to allow Merlin to be the one to take over Camelot. So it's a very interesting take. I think it's just a miniseries, so, you know, it's kind of this setup of, like, Percival, of course, the beginning. He returns the Grail to the castle. He's in Arthur's throne, and then we kind of get a little bit of a flashback stuff of a lot of the things that Merlin did to get Arthur to be into the throne, and then, of course, things look bad for Percival at the end of this issue, but again, it's a really interesting, really unique take. The cover lets it on that it's a little bit more bloody than it actually is. It is still pretty bloody, but not as, you know, gory as the cover might lead you to believe.
And it takes place definitely in medieval times?
Absolutely.
Okay, I didn't know if it was, like, an updated, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, and again, I don't know if they're going to do some sort of reveal, like, Star Wars takes place in a galaxy far, far away a long time ago. Mm-hmm. You know, they're very much like, no, this is, you know, this is Britain, this is the time of Merlin, and this is, you know, Lady in the Lake, and all the pieces are here that we know and have seen, you know, Knights of the Round Table, people wearing armor, horseback, you know, swords and shields and that sort of thing.
Right, all the tropes that we know that have come with King Arthur over the years.
Right.
All the classic stuff.
Right, and again, the twist on it is Merlin's evil, and he's the one who pulled the strings to get Arthur in there.
That's interesting, because I know a bit about the Arthur legend and stuff like that, because there was parts of it where, at times, Merlin had demon blood and stuff like that, so he wasn't always on the up and up, and this seems to be going down that path. You know what I mean? So that does me
100%. That's the path that it's going down. Yes, sir.
Cool beans.
So that's what we've read from this past week. Let's get into what we're looking forward to coming out this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern Standard Time or so, put up the pull post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week. Whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them mailed to your home, whether you get them in trade, however it is that you get your books, be forewarned, be forearmed, know what's coming out. And especially people like me who forgot the little flavor text at the beginning of the pull post, I forgot to change it.
What?
At the pull post, before your books and my books, I have like a little bit of flavor text at the top.
Right.
I forgot to change it from what it was last week.
Oh, so midweek holidays stink?
Yes.
There wasn't another midweek holiday this week?
There was not.
Oh, see, I was getting ready to party. That was St. Swithin's Day.
Yes. So what Todd and I have been attempting to do over the last 2 years at least, or however long we've been doing the show, one of the things we've been continually doing, which is attempting to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week, and then this year we're keeping a tally of not only how many books we're getting, but how many books break down per publisher. Again, Todd is narrowing the lead a little bit, but not by much. Again, there's going to have to be a week that comes up where I have zero books for really things to get even, but it's not a race or a competition, it's a cataloging.
That's right. If it was, you'd be winning, though.
Right. So, you started the show, so you go first, sir.
I'm looking over your list, and is the book you're looking forward to most Dark Days the Casting number one?
It is Dark Days the Casting number one.
Yay!
And I would think that's the book that you're probably most looking forward to coming out this week as well.
Sure.
All right, there you go. So we had talked about the previous Dark Days book, The Forge. This is just a continuation of this, leading to what appears to be a year-long storyline that's going to be a six-issue miniseries that starts next month. And there's going to be a couple tie-ins here and there. But we'll see how our mileage with those tie-ins and one-shots and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But this one appears to be a direct continuation of The Forge. Not Forge the X-Man.
No, the best X-Man.
Right. No. He's not Gambit or Rogue, so I don't know who he is.
Hey, just quick question. When are they getting those in Marvel Puzzle Quest?
Well, we've got Vulture coming out this week. We've got Mockingbird after that. I'm sure right after Mockingbird.
And if that Mockingbird don't sing...
You're going to buy Gambit a diamond ring?
Yes.
Okay.
For Rogue.
Or Rogue. She'll have to put it over her gloved hand. So while you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out past editions of The Pull Post, past editions of this show, past editions of Longbox Heroes After Dark. Anything that we've ever done on the internet exists, all on that website for your perusing pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
Also, toward the top of the page, there's a little button there that says Store, where you could purchase a t-shirt or sticker with our fancy logo on it for a very reasonable price, at least in my opinion. We're not trying to rake you over the coals to sell you nice things. But if you want to buy anything, more or less anything, and this podcast I don't think exists anymore, so I can kind of lift from this. Pretty much anything but an actual Amazon, you could purchase through our Amazon click-through link at the top of the page.
Wow.
We missed out to plug Prime Day, but it doesn't matter. And you buy your stuff, as long as you buy your stuff through our link. That's all we care about.
Yes, buy a yacht or maybe a space shuttle through our link.
Now, those I don't think they have on there. Maybe a yacht. Somebody put up there once, but probably didn't get any movement on that.
Mm.
Now, just looking at what was purchased this past week, a couple notable purchases from this past week is someone purchased the Wonder Woman vs. Doomsday Low Superheroes mini set. Someone also purchased a Shopkins Toasty Pop plush.
Mm.
And someone also purchased Inception on Blu-ray. A movie I only saw once, and I should probably again, because I enjoyed it.
They're probably getting ready for Dunkirk.
There you go.
Another Nolan movie.
And then someone also purchased the Marvel Cinematic Phase 2 Blu-ray box set.
The whole 2?
Yes. Wow. Iron Man 3, Thor the Dark World, Winter Soldier, Guardians of the Galaxy, Age of Ultron, Ant-Man.
I wonder if that comes in some kind of like special... Remember the briefcase they had?
It does. It does come in a fancy case. Hang on.
Oh, boy. Look at that.
I think it's like a replica of the Tesseract or something.
Oh, I know there was... that was what The first phase was, I think, where they had the... Maybe it was the second one, where it comes the briefcase with the Tesseract.
The first one... Yeah, the first one was the briefcase. This one... Yeah, it's like the closed stone with the Tesseract inside of it. Phase one had the briefcase that opened up with the arc reactor inside.
And I think there's one with the member of the briefcase that turned into Tony's armor from Iron Man 2.
Oh, okay.
There's one that has that, which is, I think, is kind of cool. But it doesn't actually turn in, probably has a warning on it, like, does not actually turn into Iron Man armor, so people can't sue.
I'm still gonna.
My favorite is still the Green Lantern power battery. Will not give wearer superpowers. Or the Legion Flightling will not actually enable wearer to fly. That is on the side of the box, by the way.
Because you know somebody tried to fly. So, thank you everyone who purchased anything through our Amazon click-through. Every little bit purchased helps immensely.
Yes, it does.
So, let's get into Todd and Jeff issues. This would be Daredevil number 7.
Before we go further, I'm going to go to Art Attack.
Oh, we had a Todd's Art Attack this week. Yes,
that's
I
right.
Forgot. My apologies.
Not a problem. I didn't want to stomp on you, but Rich Grimmel? I'm not sure how to say his last name. I know we've met him. He was the Ant-Man fan, I believe.
Oh,
has
yeah.
A Scott Eaton page from Aquaman, and it's very beautiful. I've been enjoying the Aquaman run since of Rebirth. So that is a beautiful page. I hope you display it proudly and don't get any water on it, because even though it is Aquaman, it doesn't go well with original art.
If you say so.
Water and original art do not mix. That's all. Even though it is an Aquaman page.
You don't know that.
You know what? Do you have any artwork I can test that on?
Yeah, I have it framed on my wall. Good luck.
All right, I'm just going to throw buckets at it all day.
Anyway.
But now on to
now
Todd
we can
Joe
get
have
on
issues.
Todd and Joe have issues.
Yes.
So this is Daredevil number 7 from the 2011 relaunch by Mark Waid. Not art by Chris Somney. I think he did the cover. But the inside interiors are done by Paulo Rivera. Now, this is a self-contained story, but there are framing elements, which kind of tell you what was going on previously and set up a cliffhanger for the next story arc. But right. Taking those out of the mix, this again is a contained story arc where Daredevil is stuck in the snow after a bus crash, leading 8 children, hopefully to safety, and being in the middle of a snowstorm, his radar sense is of little use to him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this being one of the few issues of Daredevil that you actually read, I think you enjoyed this the first time around. I think this is probably one of the more recent books that we've done here.
I think the most recent was through a fan. We did one of the Rebirth Superman books.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
That's going to be the earliest. I think this would fall into second after that. I can't think of anything that we would have done that was sooner than that. But yes, this is probably the closest to that. But yeah, I did. This is the book at the time. I'm not sure how many issues before it, because this got renumbered too, like we joked around at the beginning of the show. But this was the Mark Waid run, and this is the run that made me a Daredevil fan and probably ruined Daredevil for me for the rest of my life. Because
right.
Honestly, no one will ever probably capture what Mark Waid did with Daredevil again. It's probably its own little niche thing in the world of Daredevil that I think we've discussed, me and you. Like, you know, it's more of a different kind of book most of the time other people write it. But I like the fun, whimsical, but still at times tragicness of the Matt Murdock run by Mark Waid. And this issue is fantastic in that it's the hero, it's Matt being the hero that I always want in my comics, where it's like, okay, my powers are working against this storm, but I have to get these kids to safety, and he fights the fight, and in the end, it works out. But along the way, there are horrible scenes of, you know, frightened children in the snow. The scene where he tells them that he hears the plow truck and he's yelling to them, and he's like, it's 250 yards away, maybe we can make it. And he tells the kids to yell for help and run, and then realizes it was a huge mistake because he didn't tell the kids why. So they all start running, and just because they think something's attacking or what. And just these children who can't see, and the artist does a beautiful job of, like, they're running and, like, their hats are down over their head because obviously they can't see, but it's just utter chaos. And I just love, like, some of that stuff in this book. It's a very simple premise, but, you know, done very, very well.
So for me, you know how you talked about this, that Matt Murdock does the thing that you want your hero to do the most,
mm-hmm.
Which is continue to fight.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, the thing that he does with the continuing to fight is he inspires these kids to survive.
Right.
He inspires these kids that are kind of, like, flippant, kind of not listening, kind of not following along, not getting along with each other, all that sort of thing. He gets them to work together to not only save themselves, but also himself, you know, Daredevil as well.
Mm-hmm. Pulls it all together. And like I said, I love the humor in it, in the Christmas party beforehand is fantastic with the I'm Not Daredevil shirt, which I don't know if they ever made, but they should have.
They did. Not a sponsor. The company We Love Fine makes them. And actually, somebody got it for me 1 year for my birthday a couple years back.
And it's actually true when you wear it.
I'm the exact opposite of what Daredevil is. Everything that Daredevil is, I'm the exact opposite. I can see. I can barely move.
That's right.
Right.
Didn't you get hit in the eyes with something once?
That was mist from a Japanese professional wrestler.
Okay. But yeah, like I said, I love this run of Daredevil, and it will always be in my heart. And this issue is a classic one. It's almost kind of a Christmas issue, too. So it gets an extra special place in my heart.
Right, so again, I was glad to reread this. Again, this is a book that's part of my collection, proudly part of my collection. And yeah, I'm glad we got a chance to reread it. So what do we got on tap for next week, Todd?
Next week is the pretty much the Simpsons softball episode of a comic book.
Ooh.
Which is my favorite run of superhero comics ever, is Justice League International number 8, Moving Day, where all the pieces are set up for what the book is going to be like until Giffen and DeMatteis leave Justice League International / America / Justice League. It changed so many times, but Moving Day. The Bwahaha era of Justice League.
So that's a good one. Now, this is the second time we're doing a Justice League book from this run, this era, I think we did one before. Yes?
We did the first one for the 30th anniversary.
Okay, that's right.
Look at me knowing stuff.
Well, I knew I knew we did the first issue, and I knew we did it around the anniversary time.
Which was February-ish.
Right.
I figured this is enough time to do another one, don't you think?
Yes.
Okay.
Sure.
Is there a rule we only do one from a run? Or?
No.
Okay.
There is not, because I think I have multiples, but I'm just kind of speaking aloud with this.
Okay.
Yes.
I thought I was on Joe's list.
No, you're a good list.
Oh, goody.
Mm-hmm. You're only slightly a troublemaker.
Slightly? A gentle ribbing is all I do?
Yeah.
Looking forward to reading this. I don't know if I could find a copy of this issue.
You should read all of your copies at once.
Well, I could do that.
Mm-hmm. So I think that closes up this portion of the show, yes?
Yes. Now it's on to review talk.
I didn't forget anything else again?
I don't think so.
Okay.
You forget something, pshaw.
All right, so we are going to be discussing the recent Marvel-Sony Pictures joint venture, Spider-Man Homecoming. So I'll begin.
I was just going to say, you're the Spider-Man fan. I want you to go first.
So, I'm a little biased.
Mm-hmm.
Spider-Man is my favorite character.
Right.
In seeing the trailers of the previous two Sony attempts at this, Amazing Spider-Man 1 or Amazing Spider-Man and Amazing Spider-Man 2, just seeing the trailers, I knew in my heart of hearts that I could watch those movies. Because the trailers looked so bad, I did not want to have a bad image of Spider-Man in my eyes. So I never saw those movies. Imagine how bad your trailer must be that it makes a lifelong Spider-Man fan not want to see you.
I had that almost with Jonah Hex, but I cracked and went to see the movie.
Right.
But I know exactly what you're talking about.
With this, when I saw the first, once it was announced that it was going to be part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and once we got our little tease of what Spider-Man was going to be when he made his appearance in Captain America's Civil War, I started to feel with a little bit more pride in my movie version of Spider-Man. I started to feel a little bit better that they were going to do things right. Now, I can nitpick Spider-Man Homecoming until the cows come home. And I will. I do have a few little things. And they are the nitpickiest of nitpicky things in the world. But I only cried a little bit during this movie. Because I love this movie. Absolutely. I want to see it again right now. The premise of this movie is, during the aftermath of the first Avengers movie, Adrian Toomes, who we'll just call Michael Keaton from here on out, the Vulture, mm-hmm. Is leading a group of construction people to clean up the wreckage, and then Cagney or Lacey, I'm not sure which is which, leads the damage control people in to say that we're taking this over now. You know, essentially, Stark is paying people to take care of this. Before they go, they find out that they have a truck that has a whole bunch of, like, weird alien weapons still on it. And then over the course of the next 8 years, they are using this to build technology, build weapons to sell on the open market, and Michael Keaton has made himself a fancy Vulture outfit that he uses to go around, and prior to Spider-Man arriving, we don't really see him doing any real sort of menace, if you will. So, Spider-Man, we get a little thing where he shows a video log, or let's call them vlogs, of him being recruited to help the Avengers out during the course of Civil War, and I thought that was really well done. They did a really good job of establishing who this new Peter Parker is, less than who the new Spider-Man is, because we all know who Spider-Man is after a third reboot and five other movies. If you don't know who Spider-Man is, tell your story walking. So, Spider-Man, of course, is a teenager. He is a young kid. I think they said he's a sophomore in high school.
I think
so. Okay, so he has the usual high school problems, but also he is attempting to be Spider-Man as well, going out on patrol, but he wants to go back. He had that taste of being next to the Avengers, and he wants it again, constantly hounding Happy Hogan, played by Jon Favreau, constantly hounding Tony Stark, and then again, of course, he comes upon the Vulture and his goons doing their stuff, performing heists, selling the weapons, fails a couple times, gets his fancy spider suit taken away from him, he's back to basics, and reaches deep down, defeats the Vulture, but just like any good superhero, especially Spider-Man, who is the best, does not kill the Vulture. He saves him so that he could do the time for his crime, if you will, and he shows maturity and growth through the course of the movie. He doesn't get the girl, but he gets to live on to be Spider-Man another day.
Right.
I think that's a good synopsis of the film.
I think he nailed it.
All right. What did you feel about the film, Todd?
I thought the movie was okay.
Aww.
And here's why. There are things that I loved about this movie. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, the montage of Peter vlogging about the Civil War thing, and he's like, oh my God, I took Captain America's shield, blah, 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 and oh my God, he's big now, I gotta go. I was cracking up. I'm like, this is might be one of my favorite scenes of all time in the Marvel Cinematic movies. And there was a bunch of other things that I thoroughly enjoyed. And then, like, I could nitpick things of certain things, like Flash Thompson to me shouldn't be a Scholastic person. He should be the meathead to Peter's, Brainiac.
Right.
I'm like, okay, I don't care. I don't even care that they made him of, maybe Indian descent.
Right.
I'm not sure. Like, I'm not, like, whatever. They made me hate Flash. That's all I need, right?
You want your villain to be people. I understand.
Right. You nailed me. None of that bothered me. I'm like, okay, Flash, as long as I hate him. But two things absolutely took this from a great movie to evening it out to an okay movie, if you know what I mean.
Right.
Like, one was the suit. I was so done with the suit by the middle of this movie.
Right.
Where, now, I understand Peter has had, specialty suits in the comic and stuff like that, but when they made it, when we got to it has its AI and he's having a conversation with the suit, I checked out. I'm like, I don't need Iron Man's Spider-Man. Like, that really bugged me. We had a drone in it. It had interrogation mode. It had one-shot kill if you want. And I'm like, all right, Tony does overthink things. So I got the joke. But there was a lot where I was just like, oh, my God, I hate this. Hate it. A parachute? I'm like, I completely – this is overkill on the suit. And two – Ned is the worst character in the history of comic book movies.
Aww.
I hate Ned. All Ned's job was to be dopey and repeat everything that we've already seen. That was his job. And make Peter's life miserable. Even
Aww.
Though he kind of saves him at the end. I hate Ned. The only thing I thought would be cool is Matt. Like, they never said his last name, and I IMDb'd it. He's like, I'm wondering if he'll be Ned Leeds at some point, and I would love to see him become Pudge Goblin. Would be fantastic. But otherwise, just be Ned. Just kill every time he came on the screen. I'm like, I can't wait till this scene is over. I honestly cannot wait until this scene is over. Then we get like to the end, and I like the whole thing with Vulture and the swerve they give you of that he's actually, the father of Peter's date and everything. And I love those scenes.
Right.
And I love the
him. Okay. I just have to jump in. Him figuring it out while Liz and Peter are talking
mm-hmm.
was a fantastic scene. However, toward the end, when they start putting the musical stings in there.
What?
To make sure that you know that these are the key things that Peter is saying that he's picking up on. Might have been a little bit ham-fisted.
Right. But I do like the fact that Peter saves Keaton, and Keaton in the end's kind of like, well, you saved my daughter and you saved me, and if I kill you, maybe, like, there's many ways I can take him not being Peter. One is for himself, that he saved his life. Two, he saved his daughter. And three, if I kill you and it's ever brought, my daughter will hate me. Even more than like her having to come to prison to visit me. But I like all that. But my favorite thing in the whole movie is the Captain America stingers all through the movie.
Oh, yeah.
And the best one is in the gym class when he's like, one teacher who's the teacher who has checked out, on everything.
Yep.
In life, like in class, like I've made terrible decisions. And now I'm a gym teacher teaching these kids. And he's like, this is health class. And I'm here with your gym teacher, my buddy. And he gestures to the left, but the gym teacher's standing on the right. I couldn't breathe, Joe. I legitimately couldn't breathe at that joke. I was like, that might be the best sight gag that I've ever seen in a Marvel movie.
This is a legitimate funny movie.
Yes, and that's the problem that I have with Ned, is you don't need comic relief when you have Spider-Man. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
I guess, and again, I don't think that, and I get where you're coming from with Ned, and I don't think that Ned was comic relief, and I saw a lot of people, and I'll be honest with you, I didn't read as much of the Miles Morales Spider-Man as I did, you know, Peter Parker Spider-Man, but apparently a lot of the elements and characters and looks and feels of everyone in this, at least in the Peter Parker, like not the superhero side, but on the civilian identity side, were taken from the Miles Morales.
Right, and I never read any of the Miles or any of the Ultimate stuff, so there's a lot of stuff that I'm kind of like, oh, is this... Not that I, like, cause I, like, we've discussed when we've argued about certain shows and takes on comics, that there's a lot to take from. Do you know what I mean? Like, right. Spider-Man has a huge, rich history. And then on top of that, you have two universes of Spider-Man to pull from. And in that second universe, you have two versions of Spider-Man.
Right.
So I'm like, I'm watching this and I'm like, and the comic fan in me is like, no, is this Ultimate? Is this Miles? Yeah. Is this, or is this all brand new? Do you know what I mean? Like, in a weird way, that's what I think sometimes when I'm watching a comic movie, when I'm not truly, like, know that character. And that's what was going on with this movie.
But like I said, I really liked it. I'm with you on the suit. They went a little bit too far with the suit, like having the AI, like how Tony has, naming it Karen, carrying on the conversations with it. I get why they did it, because they wanted to do the parallels between, you know, Tony and Peter and Iron Man and Spider-Man, and like Tony's answer for everything is just make it a suit of armor, you know, using my technology, it's like that. But I like better when Peter is figuring stuff out, like he's in school and while class is going on, he's mixing up new web fluid, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know,
he's stealing the chemicals so he can do it.
Right. I like that sort of, you know, sort of thing. And Spider-Man doesn't work when he has all the answers.
Exactly. That's the thing, is people forget is that Peter was a smart character on his own. He invented the webbing. He invented the Spidey tracers. He invented the webbers. Is like it just seems like now it's less Peter, more Tony.
Right, but once he gets the suit taken away from him, he still shows that he's a very capable hero in his own right. And of course they do the classic thing where all the rubble is on top of him and he digs down deep and he is able to get out of the rubble. You know, there's a very classic scene. I think it's like Amazing Spider-Man number 32, where...
And 129 and 230. That's one of them that's been done like...
It's been done once or twice or 100 times.
Oh, ask a certain retailer about that. about that being done, like how it's like the Marvel version of Superman saying burn and then hitting somebody with his heat vision. It's like, oh, that's been done a few times. But only if he was getting her medicine, it would have been better.
Right, I was going to say, this is the classic one, I have to get Aunt May her medicine.
Mm-hmm. What did you think about Marissa Tomei as Aunt May?
Okay.
I do think, what?
Go ahead.
Because I do think they planed her up for this movie compared to when she was in Civil War, if you know what I mean?
100%.
Cause it was like, oh, she's in, like, I don't say frumpy clothes, but like, you know, and her hair is all down. They give her the big glasses and everything. And I'm like, oh, that's not the Marissa Tomei's Aunt May I remember from Civil War. But that's I just found it amusing.
Okay. Especially since, as you mentioned, Civil War, you know, she's, you know, a hot lady.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's two instances in the movie in the first half where both Tony Stark and the sandwich shop guy both remark about how hot she is.
Mm-hmm. And the waiter gives her free dessert.
Right. And then she's not as hot as she was in the previous movies. I feel as though they probably maybe got a note,
mm-hmm,
or something came back from testing,
mm-hmm,
that's too hot. But we've already established her as being hot, so we can't take all of the stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
It seems as though they went out of her way, and you said it perfectly, to make her look more frumpy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that was one of my nitpicks, you know? Like, you have Tony Stark, and he's saying, like, oh, how hot this lady is. And the waitress, like, oh, this, gonna give this lady free dessert. Or the sandwich guy, like, oh, man, she's so hot. And then you see her, and you're just like, I'm not sexist or nothing, but that's not the same lady that was in the last movie.
Nope. There's a lot, you know, when you, hairstyles make a difference.
Yep, yep. Mom jeans make a difference.
Yep.
And again, a couple nitpicks, right? So, I like the action sequences. I like the special effects. There's always like one janky special effect shot in every one of these movies, right? If it could be Avengers: Age of Ultron, where it's like that whole opening sequence. It could be in Logan, where there's the one part where X-23 like jumps over someone, and she just looks slightly off. And there's a bunch of times where Michael Keaton comes in the Vulture thing and he gets out of the Vulture outfit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually very seamless. But there was one in particular that just looked a little suspect. And it just made me like, you know, turn my head a bit.
The thing that I was like, was the Spider-Man fight on the outside of the Avengers jet.
Okay.
Where I couldn't follow anything that was going on. It was so dark, and they were like, you know, the wind's whipping, and I was like, who's winning in all this? That was the one hate win, and it goes back to the Batman Begins movie, the Nolan movie, when Ra's and Batman are fighting on the train. Like, to me, that set the bad precedent of, you know how we're going to make it action-packed, is you won't tell what's going on. It's happening so fast that your slow brain can't even figure it all out. And I was kind of like, that's what I feel is going on here with the Vulture-Spider-Man fight at the end. Or I'm becoming an old man. That is one or the other. But I'm going with that's the director's vision.
Right. I was able to keep up with that one a little bit better than I think you were, but that's something that's been going on since, at the very least, you mentioned the Nolan movies. That's kind of what doesn't do it for me with the Transformers movies. Where just a giant piece of reddish metal with some silver mm-hmm. in it and a giant blue piece of metal with some silver in it are clanging against each other very fast, and I can't figure out who's what or where.
Right. All the characters, to me, blend together. Yep. They're more machinery than color.
Yeah.
So like if they were more red and green, like I'd be like, all right, that's Green Bot and that's Red Bot.
Yeah.
But now it's kind of like, are they both Autobots? Are they both Decepticons? Or one a Decepticon? Don't even get me started. I only saw the first Transformers movie and then checked out on all the rest.
Right. But all in all, I really love this movie. But again, I'm very biased. Spider-Man's my favorite. I've been waiting for a good Spider-Man movie for a long time, and now we have, you know, 3.5 good Spider-Man movies.
3.5?
Right. The first two were good, not without their flaws. This is really good, and parts of 3 are okay.
You're lucky we're done with the show, or I could argue this for another 10 minutes.
All right, well, let's go.
Okay, the first Raimi Spider-Man movie is really good.
Mm-hmm.
Barely half of the second movie is good.
Now, see, there are people that have the flip-flop opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's more wrong with the first movie than there is with the second movie. You're just clouded because you're such a Bonesaw fan.
That is true. Bonesaw is where it's at. But then... two goes off the whole Doc Ock thing. I think at that time, that's when all the Marvel movies, and they still kind of do, they have to have, they're like, oh, all our characters, our villains have to have a tie to, the hero in a way that's other than just their villain. And the whole thing with Doc Ock, I don't know, just being, you know, like, oh, it went awry, likable. And the whole movie is Peter going, I can't tell Mary Jane I love her, because if the villains ever find out who I am, they could kill my family. That's the whole premise of the movie. And then he just goes, hey, Ock, it's me. Calm down. I'm going to take the mask off and I'm going to show you who I am. And I'm like, wow, I've just watched an hour and 45 minutes of just of nothing because of this scene. Three is terrible. Three is absolutely terrible, except for the jazz club scene. That's it.
I agree.
And then the two amazing Spider-Man movies are two make up three quarters of a good movie, maybe. Because okay. there is brilliant stuff in those amazing Spider-Man movies. That's, to me, that was the closest that they got to Spider-Man with the quips. And Andrew Garfield was fantastic. And Sally Field as Aunt May was amazing. Then the villains ruined that movie. The Green Goblin is god-awful. And literally for the second movie, for the Shocker, they steal the Riddler's storyline from Batman. What was the third Batman movie back in
Batman
the
Forever.
They literally steal the Riddler storyline from Batman Forever.
Isn't it like Spider-Man didn't wish him happy birthday or something?
No, he's pretending Spider-Man's his friend, and yeah, and he's underappreciated at work, and then there's an accident, and he gets, you know, whatever happens, and then he wants revenge on all the people who, it's absolutely terrible. But the Gwen Stacy Peter is absolutely amazing.
Okay.
So, like, I know you don't want to, but I think at some point, even if you just check out little bits of it, to see how good, I can't think of her name is, as Stacy, and Andrew Garfield as Peter, and Aunt May, Sally Field, and then, spoiler alert, the scene where Gwen dies in the second movie.
Yes.
It's obviously not the bridge scene because we kind of use that in Spider-Man Raimi movies. But her falling in the clock tower and Spidey doing the whole thing with the webbing and her neck snaps is one of the most brutal scenes in comic book history of movies. You're like, that just looks all kinds of wrong. Just, that to me, captures the death of Gwen Stacy perfectly. But once again, all the villains are god-awful.
I'll probably never watch those movies. I'll watch Spider-Man Homecoming again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't got time in my life to be watching Terrence on purpose.
No. Maybe if you can watch the Gwen Stacy scene like on YouTube or something like that. It's like 2 minutes. Do you know what I mean?
I'll go try to find it illegally, yes.
Right. It's shot very well. But otherwise, you don't go killing yourself.
All right. I won't. I think that covers everything, though.
I think it does. I went off on a tangent there.
I'm glad. I like rants.
I do tend to rant, so.
So, yeah, I do thank everyone for listening. This was episode 354 of Long Box Heroes, original numbering. Until we hit 400, then we're going to go to a new number one.
And then until we get close to 500 again.
Right. So, for Todd, this is Joe. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll catch you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
Woo!